from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Welcome to the Good Atheist Podcast. My name is Jacob Fortan. Today I have a very special guest. For those of you who've been paying attention for the past few weeks, you know that we did an Indiegogo campaign for my upcoming book, Bible Stories. And through the ordeal that was 50 days of my life that never seemed to end, we were able to actually successfully do this project, and I'm now just sort of like happily moving along and being like, wow, job well done. And with that in mind, because it was so difficult, I have continued my campaign to try to help people who are in similar situations and are trying to get something off the ground. Because I do believe that with the atheist community and the money not being there like the religious ones, there are other ways for people to show support, and this is one of them. Today, my guest is Sylvia Brooks, and she's currently working on a movie called Hug an Atheist. Thanks for joining me, Sylvia.
Hi, Jacob.
Now, tell me a little bit about your project. What is Hug an Atheist as a movie, and why did it come about?
Well, the idea is, well, start with seeing how it came about. I'm in England. I've got lots of friends in America, and I love visiting America. And some of my friends in America, I know on Facebook, and they're atheists, and they campaign for atheist things. And seeing the things they posted over the last 4 years, I just couldn't believe what they have to put up with. And being an atheist myself, it blew my mind. I was sitting here in disbelief how people get treated as atheists in the USA. It just does not make any sense to me. So for a long time, I was wondering, is there anything I can do to get involved? I'm over here, there, over there. I mean, what can I do? And been reading things online and blogs and everything, and I'm not the best writer. I mean, I'm a grammar Nazi, as they say, but that's about it. And so there are already so many great blogs out there, so didn't really want to do that. So I thought, what can I do that would help make a difference? And my husband was kind enough to tell me, make a film. And I said, nah, never be good enough at that. But he trusts in me. He's always had way more confidence in me than I had. And being a filmmaker, he said it's a natural thing to do. So that's how I came about it, to make a film. And then it was trying to work out which scope we would take in the film. And we decided to do something very positive, not focus on all the negative stuff that's been happening to atheists and blaming other people for what's happening to us, but have a sort of neutral approach to what it is we believe in, how we live our lives, and show people we're not really that different. We love other people. We like to get married. We like cute little babies, and we like to see them grow up and become nice people. And when somebody dies, we feel really sad, and we have to try to find ways to handle grief and things like that. So I thought, if I could just portray atheists as people that anyone can relate to, that might help. So that's the idea.
So this is hence the reason for the hug, sort of. What this is basically, you would say, is a very bridge-building kind of movie. So how do you plan to, say, show people, I mean, other than you know, because you could tell them, well, we're just like this. How do you intend to show religious people through your movie that we are these things? Like, what's your format going to be?
Well, we follow several different groups of, well, several different atheist and agnostic people. For example, we've got one couple involved who are getting married, and it's going to be a humanist ceremony, and we can follow that and see the process, how they got together, and what's important in that ceremony, and how it's similar to religious ceremonies, so people can see, really, we're not that different. It's just the God part that's left out of it. The other thing is, we've got a girl involved who's lost her husband a few years, only a year after she got married. It's very tragic and sad story. And her husband was killed in a motorcycle accident by an elderly Christian lady who never actually bothered to apologize for running her husband over. And she can tell her story of how she dealt with that grief because she used to be Christian. She was raised as a Catholic, and she gradually lost her faith too, losing her husband to a Christian lady who never really bothered to do the Christian thing, showing right. things how it's only natural how we deal with these things, and how she came to terms with never seeing her husband again. All those things.
So you take different aspects of people's lives, is what you're saying.
Yes, sort of the big things in people's life, like I said, the getting married, dealing with grief, raising children, but also dealing, just going about your daily jobs, showing that there's no baby eating involved or devil worshipping, just showing people as normal human beings, really.
Well, I think one of the important points, and this is why I wanted to have you on the show, because I wanted to support the project, and because I believe in a very multi-phased approach to how we communicate with religious people. Now, if you've ever listened to my show, you would realize that I'm actually usually more on the aggressive spectrum. Like, even my book is to make fun of the religion. It's brutal. It's critical. But I don't believe for a second that my technique is the only game in town. And in fact, I know that it isn't.
Well, I love that kind of technique. I love that kind of technique. And I was very tempted to go on that kind of route too. But I decided, with putting all the things out there, to try to go with an approach where I think I want religious people to be able to see this and relate to it. And if I go on the very critical approach towards them, they might not be interested in watching it.
Yeah, no. And we have, like, for instance, in that approach, like my show, I feel to some degree is to bring comfort and righteous indignation to the people who are non-believers. I'm probably more on the righteous indignation side. And that's a necessary part, because we live in a world that is controlled by religious people, and that's a frustrating world. And I try to sort of like fill that gap of frustration, but I also don't think, I mean, I am not a bridge builder. I don't, because I don't aim to be, first of all, I don't think that's my job, but I don't disagree with the strategy one bit. I mean, you yourself mentioned that your disbelief was gradual. Tell us a little bit about sort of what your beliefs were and how they kind of disappeared, how they eventually led to your atheism.
Well, I grew up in Belgium, which by default means you're a Catholic, but it's not a very Roman Catholic country. It's out there. It's just, you grow up, you're a Catholic.
It's part of the world. Yeah. Like, aren't part of your taxes go straight to the church or something like that? Or
yes.
Am I thinking of?
Yes.
It is that? Okay.
Yes. Priests are paid by the state. So,
fun.
Yeah. When you're born in Belgium, 90% of people probably are, well, back when I was born in 78, you were a Catholic. So going to school, you had religious education as part of going to school. I mean, we didn't go to Sunday school. There was just religious education in school, and the religious education was just Catholicism. It was learning about Jesus and how nice he was and everything. And in my school, we also had a class for non-believers. I think about two kids in my class went to that class, and it was a class on morals and ethics and things like that. And I remember back in primary school asking my parents, why can't I go to that class? It looks more fun. But I just went along going through all the motions and doing my Holy Communion and then confirmation, everything. I had, you know, the full shebang, doing everything. And I also remember when doing my confirmation, I asked, do I really have to do this? And then I thought, well, there's a couple of bonuses attached to it because I get a party and I get presents. So.
Yeah, I think that most people, I mean, it's like the bar mitzvah, right? Who's really going to say no to a shitload of cash? Nobody.
Yeah. So, yeah, slightly hypocritical, but hey, you're 12 years old.
Yeah, you're 12 years old, and for you, like, $100 is a fucking $1 million.
There you go. So then I went to, well, Catholic school, all of high school, including schools with nuns and everything. And I remember having conversations. I was a library geek. I spent all my afternoons in the library, and it was working with nuns there. And I remember conversations about Adam and Eve and how the nuns literally believed that. And I was like, no, you can't literally believe that. And even though it was a Catholic school, we were taught evolution as science. So that was, well, surprisingly, the good thing about it. We weren't taught creationism.
Well, yeah, no, that's the advantage. The Catholic Church did have to come forward. But, you know, unlike evangelical churches, the Catholic Church, or at least the Vatican, has a science department. They have to pretend like they're trying. So you can't just say no to evolution and pretend that you're a scientist. That doesn't work.
And Catholic schools in Belgium do have quite a good standard of education. So, well, can't complain about it.
I have heard that Belgian people lack somewhat of a identity, a national identity. Is the religion kind of a substitute for that?
Oh, no, no, no. Belgium doesn't have an identity because we were an artificially formed country, which is a totally different story. In Belgium, you've got...
Oh, I see.
It's kind of like Canada where...
We got German, you got French, and what's the other one?
Dutch.
Dutch. And Dutch.
That's
yeah. So it's a mesh.
You know, we could talk for hours on that. It's a, yeah.
Well,
yes.
Maybe that's a different show. Be like the politics of Belgium.
Yeah. Make sure you have some paracetamol and ibuprofen nearby if you want to talk about that. Headache inducing, but the majority in Belgium is Dutch. Then there's about 40% French and a tiny minority is German. We've got three official languages and we fight all the time, well, the Flemish and the French, and we don't get along. And so your identity is either your Flemish or your French Walloon. So.
But everyone's Catholic.
Yeah.
Well, at least that's...
Well, only because the Spanish Inquisition got as far as where we are. Otherwise, we would have been Protestant. Actually, a funny thing is there's a village in Flemish part of Belgium where the Spanish Inquisition didn't manage to get to, and they are still a majority Protestant.
Wow. That you can see directly the influence of that. Oh, you know what the Inquisition's called now, by the way? It's called the Congregation of the Doctrine of the Faith. It was headed, at least, by the current pope. So the current pope was the head of the Inquisition, just today's modern Inquisition. They changed the name. Apparently, it wasn't popular. Go figure.
I wonder why.
So you have this. So I guess what you had is, at first, it seemed like religion was a matter of convenience or even necessity. And then once you started probing, I mean, naturally, everyone's going to have some questions. You found the answers, I'm assuming, to be completely unsatisfactory?
Well, it was a case of when studying for your confirmation things, they tell you all the nice stories from the Bible, but I always just assumed, and the way they told them to me, that they're just nice stories. It gives you an idea of how to be a good person. They only went for the nice parts of the Bible, by the way.
Yeah, that's why I'm writing my book, because everybody else skips past everything else, which is actually the majority of the Bible, by the way.
So, to me, it was more like a philosophy of life than actually really thinking that Jesus died for our sins, which I never understood how that works.
Do you want me to explain? Because I can tell you the rationale, and then you can tell me if, like... Maybe it still doesn't make any sense. Maybe it's just sort of a complete rejection of logic.
Well, I've read different ways of how it's supposed to be the case, but it just doesn't make any sense.
Well, it's based on, like, I think that everyone who's always confused when you ask, why does something have to die in order for sins to be absolved? I mean, it becomes immediately clear when you realize that that's just how things have been done for a long time, is that random acts of terror happen because Mother Nature is a motherfucking bitch who's going to take away all your loved ones if you aren't careful. And, you know, one of the reasons why they always sacrifice innocent things is that's because what it seems to be what God takes exclusively, people who are innocent. So, you know, the natural assumption is that, well, he must love innocent things. And if you look at the whole story of Jesus, they always say, well, he lived a blameless life, he was innocent, and therefore, that's what made the sacrifice just all that more delicious.
Yeah, but why do you need to sacrifice something to save something? It just, yeah.
It's a type of, well, I mean, that's what scapegoat comes from. It comes from the Jews believing that if you took another pure entity, you could take all of your sins, transfer it onto that innocent animal, kill it, and then be absolved of those sins. That's the justification.
But it still doesn't make sense or reason.
Of course, that's silly. Of course it doesn't make sense. It's a belief of primitive people, like back when they thought that all those little fires in the sky were just other people, or, you know, campfires really far away, or all kinds of stupid nonsense. They didn't know it was giant balls of gas billions of, you know, light years away. They didn't know. So their ideas didn't make any sense. But it made sense for their own world. I mean, in their own world, it must have made sense. I mean, otherwise, we'd all be kind of raising our eyebrow and be like, what does sacrifice have to do with anything? Just like, that doesn't influence me. I'm like, if you kill yourself, do you pay off my debt? I don't see how you do.
Unless I leave you everything in my will.
I suppose so, but I mean, that would be a hell of a long will if you were a god and saying that you were absolving everyone. Be a hell of a will. A will that has to look forward in the future as well. So essentially, at what point, though, in all of this, did you just say, put your foot down and say, I am an atheist? Is there an actual moment where that happened that's clear and crystallized in your mind?
Kind of at university, the first year at university, again, Catholic university, one of the oldest universities in Europe. My philosophy professor, who was a Catholic priest, just tried to prove God through philosophy. In high school, I went
to... Failed miserably.
He failed miserably. Well, in high school, I went to a special arts college, and we got philosophy from the most wonderful teacher there, who, the drunker he was, the better his philosophy was.
That sounds like Hitchens, yeah. Are you sure it wasn't Christopher Hitchens your teacher?
No, but they had the same hairstyle, although
my
teachers were slightly greasier.
Yeah. It's just... All right, good.
The way he told us how to think just made me want to strangle the other guy and make him shut up. And since I went to study art history, you learn a lot about all the meanings of those paintings and how the Bible is portrayed and everything there. And we had a whole bunch of history lessons too, and just learning everything about the history of religion and everything in art history. It was sort of a moment saying, screw this. There's no way this can be true. It's just history. It's stories. That's all there is to it. That's all. That's how it can make sense. And
did it have an impact on your life coming out, or at least making that decision? Like, did anyone ever give you a hard time?
Well, my mother-in-law thought I'd abducted her little baby boy.
Into your evil cult or something?
Yeah. I made him an atheist. I abducted him to England. I'm an evil, evil witch.
So let me
He's
ask you this question.
Too.
Well, I think that if he encouraged you to this movie, I sure hope he is. My question would be, do you think that your mother-in-law is going to watch this movie?
I hope not.
You hope not?
No.
Why do you hope not? I thought this was a bridge-building exercise. She doesn't need to. You don't need to build bridges there?
Yeah, that was a bridge that was blown up a long time ago. And it's
I see.
That's a family history thing.
Okay, all right. I guess you've abandoned all hope there. All right.
Yes.
Well, I was hoping that maybe, because, I mean, that would have been a really good story, saying, like, yes, this is a bridge-building thing. But unfortunately... That's a bridge too far. So with this project, now you're about almost 8,000 as of now we're speaking, right? Like, I'd like to round up, because by the time people are listening, and it's probably going to be at around there.
I hope it's way more.
And there's at least from this podcast, 19 days to go into the campaign.
Yeah, 18 or 19.
18 or 19. How many days did you make the campaign in total?
53.
53 days.
Yes.
Okay. So now that means that you have less than 20 days to come up with
nearly 20,000.
About four times what you got going on almost, or three times maybe. So my question to you is, you know, obviously there's going to be people who are like, who want to support this project. But they might find themselves in a situation being like, what do we do? What's going to happen if the project doesn't go through? I mean, with the serious challenge up ahead, because, I mean, I was able to bring like 18,000 in 30 days, but I already had a pre-existing fan base that I'd been priming these people for a long time about this book. So you have a much bigger challenge ahead of you. Now, luckily, people normally support film a lot more than they support books, just because I think people like movies more than they like books. We can all agree on that.
I like both.
Now, is there... Well, yes. Well, I mean, not everybody likes both, but I mean, or at least not equally. But my question is, if someone's really thinking about supporting it, but they still in their back of their minds be like, well, there's a chance that this, you know, like obviously this funding might not go through. Do you have a contingency plan? What is the plan if the first campaign doesn't make it?
The day that the campaign ends, the next day we're off to America, actually. As that was planned about a year and a half ago anyway. So if it doesn't work out, we'll regroup and we'll come back with a vengeance. And while we're in America, we'll be meeting up with some people, making some more promotional clips, and trying to get the word out there a bit more. And after a couple of weeks of making sure we've got everything back together, all the eggs in a row and everything, whatever they call it, we'd come back with an even stronger campaign.
Well, I went through this myself where my first campaign did not go through. And I think that it's important for people to realize that sometimes in these kinds of instances, the first campaign is just one where you're trying to reach an audience. And the cool thing is that you've had some high-profile atheists, notably Richard Carrier, who I'm hopefully going to have on the podcast in a few days, blogged about it.
He's so nice.
He is a nice guy. I'm looking forward to having him on the show. I think he's also pretty funny. I don't know if you've watched any of his lecture. He seems to be pretty off the cuff, so I think we're going to have a good time. He's supported the project, and I think that just in that sense, probably introduced a lot of other people to it. And I think that what's probably going to happen is that even if this first one doesn't take off, I'd still like people to encourage people. I'm like, look, there's no risk, because if the campaign doesn't go through, everyone gets refunded. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. So.
Right. So there's no risk, and that's my first thing. And secondly, I strongly believe that even if the first one doesn't go through, I mean, like with my Kickstarter campaign, when we failed, we had reached so many people that, of course, you can reach again. You can say, hey, guys, we're trying at this date once more, and then we'll have much more momentum, much more footage. So
get their feedback on what they'd like on everything. So
exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Leave comments. Try to get involved in that sense. And, you know, I think that probably even there might be some folks out there that have great stories that could also be included. I mean, I'm sure you're open to the idea of some more stories if they're great enough.
Well, people have been emailing already with different stories. And so, yeah, we are getting there, including a story from somebody who's a nurse and an atheist and doesn't dare to come out.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's pretty normal. I think you'll find that
and they're in the
popular,
just in the Bible Belt too. So it's just somebody like a nurse would be a good person to have in the show because, well, if ever there's a caring person, it's usually a nurse. Well, you'd hope so.
You would hope so. Yeah. Well, there have been like a few bad ones, but I think that generally speaking,
yeah,
you go into this because you want to care about people and not secretly kill them. Though that does make for a good movie. I'm just saying, maybe that's your next movie project, you know, sort of like Killer Nurse. I mean, it's not just documentaries you want to make maybe in the future, is it?
No,
you'd like to be involved more. Like you have, you mentioned to me before that you have won some awards in filmmaking. What other kinds of projects have you been involved with?
Oh, well, we've done all kinds of things. I studied film studies at university. I went from art history to film. That's why we moved to England, actually. And then when I was about to graduate, I had to figure out what to do with my life. And I thought, I've studied film. I want to do something with this, but I don't want to move down to London because it's too much of a big city and I love Sheffield. So I decided to set up my own business and a film production company, and tiny little one, first with the help of my husband, and then we kind of grew, and we've done all kinds of projects, from community project where we work with inner city kids, getting them in touch with art and media and showing them things like that. We've worked for museums, making documentaries of people, view art, what their favorite pieces of art are, those kind of things. We've done boring advertising thingies. But
hey, everybody's got to pay the bills.
Actually, the thing I love doing most is filming weddings even though so many filmmakers look down on it, I absolutely love it.
Why do you love it?
It's really fun people watching. That's one thing. It lets me do what I want to do. It's a great piece of social history, I think, too. If you think back, if you could see your great grandparents getting married, I think anyone would love to see something like that.
It's true. It is a piece of family history, in a sense.
It's just you get to see people again in ways that you wouldn't otherwise ever see. So I think it's important from that point of view. For a filmmaker, it's a kind of pressure that you don't get anywhere else because you don't get any second takes. You can't just suddenly go, hey, can you do the ring shots again where you exchange the rings? Oh, I missed the vows.
Can you kiss slowly on the dance floor again? I missed that. Give it another shot.
So what I've learned there is to, like, you have to put up with people who can't stand you. We've had years where every priest and vicar we've worked with were the poster child for atheism, where I'm thinking, you're doing me a favor here with being such a pain in my ass, where you're not allowed to do anything in their churches. I'm just thinking, sometimes they treat you like you're the scum of the earth coming into their church, filming their sacred ceremonies, and I'm just thinking, well, if you're thinking of me like that, I'm thinking you're a pedophile too, because that's what they say in the news.
One stereotype for another.
And because we work in such restricted situations, you learn how to cope with these things, and it means that you get really fast in in getting what you need, because you know where to go, how to do it, and it means that when we shoot other things, we are so much faster than some other companies, because yeah, that's what we need. We know how we need it. Yeah, we know we got it right. We don't need a second.
So it's just like a trial by fire.
Yes.
Right? And you like a challenge.
Yeah. They're good fun.
Well, you've definitely like a challenge, because you've taken quite a big challenge onto yourself. I mean, especially considering you told me this in a previous conversation that we had before the show, that you just kind of threw yourself into this one.
Yes.
Like you were, you knew you had plans to travel to the U.S. You're like, hey, this would be ideal. But I mean, you didn't have a starting audience of any size. You didn't have any reputation.
Nope.
In the atheism community, you're just like, I'm going to do this. So I would say that, yes, clearly you like a challenge.
Or you could say that I'm utterly and totally crazy, which would be an equally valid opinion.
Yeah, but, you know, it's like the difference between eccentric and insane is often just a matter of money.
Yeah, in that case, I'm insane.
And you're asking for subs, so... Well, you have none, so you are insane. But if people contribute now, they can help to upgrade you to eccentric. I think that's okay.
Being eccentric, yeah.
There you go. An eccentric Belgian person. I mean, already your country is pretty eccentric as far as I'm concerned. So, you know. It's a perfect mix. Now, let me ask you this last question before we go. And again, I want to encourage everyone to go to the site. First of all, you have a WordPress blog, huganatheist.org. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. So they can go there to get are you posting updates and that kind of stuff fairly regularly?
Yes.
Good.
Well, not up to the point of some atheist bloggers, but
No. What obviously I'm not saying like, hey, are you trying to compete with Ferengula or Friendly Atheist? I'm just saying, you know, you're making sure that it's alive and you're letting people know.
Yes.
Because this is still an evolving campaign, is that right?
And there's a Facebook page where I do post things more often.
And all of these will be available in the notes and on the site. So anybody who wants to go check out the website and check out the Indiegogo campaign, they'll be free to do so. Is there anything else that you'd like to tell people about this project that I haven't covered? Have I been thorough? Is that a nice way of saying that I've been thorough, or are you just not good under pressure?
A bit of both.
Well, you know what? I'm sure that if you come up with some things, I'll include them in the notes. But until then, I think it's a fairly straightforward thing. So if you believe that it's a project that's worthwhile, if you're interested in bridge building projects, now obviously, like I said before, Good Atheist is not one of those. Maybe many people who listen to it are not on that camp, but I want you guys to remember that it really does take all shades in order to get our message out there, and I don't feel like we should ever be limited to just one. And with that, I'd like to thank Sylvia. Thanks for coming on the show, and thanks for telling us about your project and the history of your lack of belief, and even a little bit about your weirdo country.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
No problem. I'll keep everybody updated on your progress. So if you go to this, if you go to the blog, or also probably every week up until it's over, I'll post a reminder about it and a link to the site. So you guys should check it out and be supportive in any way you think is possible. There's the minimum is $10. It's a pretty easy amount.
Actually, you can actually donate less than $10.
Oh, you can.
Yeah, we've had people donate like $3 and. I am very happy with any $1 is a dollar I'd appreciate.
Yep, and like we said before, if the campaign doesn't go through,
you get your dollar back.
Well, not only do you get your dollar back, but also you showing interest will mean that when the second campaign comes around, because it doesn't sound like you're going to let this sucker down. Like you're just going to do it regardless of anyways. So we might as well just support her, or otherwise she's going to be in the poorhouse. That's all I'm saying. Sylvia, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
All right, everybody, have a good Atheist Day.